This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, so we are now in our open public session of the May 2nd meeting of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. We have previously taken roll and clearly have a quorum available for the meeting. And we're going to take roll again publicly just to confirm that.
Judge Conklin.
Present.
Ms. Fleming.
Present.
Judge Barton.
Here.
Judge Blum. Judge Buckley.
Here.
Judge Cope.
Here.
Judge Fannin. Judge Gabe.
Here.
Judge Jackson.
Present.
Judge Marginis.
Here.
Judge Nadler. Judge McCabe. Judge Thompson. We'll circle back to them. Ms. Bartleson.
Here.
Ms. Carter. Mr. Finke.
Here.
Mr. Harrigan.
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Planet.
Here.
Mr. Roddy.
Here.
Mr. Taylor.
Here.
Ms. Turner.
Here.
Ms. Ugrin Capobianco.
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Yamasaki.
Here.
Advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw.
Here.
Mr. Theodorovich.
Here.
And try a few more members by phone. Judge McCabe.
Here.
Thank you. Judge Thompson. And Ms. Carter. So I'll try to get in touch with them.
Okay, so thank you all very much. I do acknowledge we're now starting this public session at 10:16. I think it would be fair to recognize that we typically start these meetings promptly at 10 o'clock. We had administrative issues that we were dealing with promptly at 10 o'clock. So while I understand some on the phone may be a tad frustrated by the late start, I do assure you that we have been working pursuant to the schedule, which takes us to the next step on the agenda, and that is a request of a committee member to approve the minutes from the April 16th TICBAC meeting. Those minutes are set forth in your written materials at page 4 and 5 of 61 pages.
Bartleson moved.
I'm sorry, who moved?
Bartleson.
Thank you very much. Moved that the minutes be approved. Is there a second?
Planet. Turner.
I heard Planet first, though I appreciate the effort. Moved and seconded that the minutes from that meeting be approved. Is there any opposition to the motion to approve the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes from that meeting are approved. Next, it is my understanding that we did receive written public comment. That written public comment has been distributed to all of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee members, and each of them have that written public comment. It's also my understanding there's no request for in-person public comment at today's meeting. There is none, and I see no hands up, so that concludes the public comment portion of the meeting. So moving to our first agenda item, set forth in your materials, folks, beginning at page 6 of 61, and that is a discussion of the 2019-2020 AB 1058 allocations for child support commissioners and family law facilitators. And Anna is here
on the telephone.
So Anna Mays is going to present this to us. You all do have the material on this, and I'm probably repeating myself, but it's at pages 6 through 12 of your materials. And with that, Anna, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Judge Conklin and members of the committee. I apologize for not being there in person, and I appreciate you working around my schedule to put me on early on the agenda. So the proposal that we have before you today is funding for fiscal year 1920 for the AB 1058 program for the child support commissioners and the family law facilitators. So as a reminder, on January 15, 2019, the Judicial Council approved the new AB 1058 funding allocation for the child support commissioners. And so this attached proposal just mirrors that previously adopted funding methodology for the child support commissioners for fiscal year 2019-2020, and also includes the allocation using the historical funding methodology, which was also adopted by the council in the interim until a new funding methodology for the family law facilitators is adopted. So based on a series of questionnaires that was distributed to the courts, we had no courts that requested a reduction in the base amount of funding for the Family Law Facilitator Program. So the funding allocation proposal on Exhibit B shows the allocation that is consistent with what courts received during this fiscal year 18-19. So all of the courts will receive exactly, the proposal is that all the courts would receive exactly what they received during this fiscal year since there were no funds that were made available by the courts. I would like to make a note that during the questionnaire process for the Child Support Commissioner side of the program, we did receive information from one of the courts that they did not want all of the base allocation that they would be entitled to receive under the new funding methodology, and that amount is $37,039. So the funding methodology did not anticipate what to do with those funds if a court indicated they did not wish to receive those. So those funds will be held until we do what our mid-year reallocation process, where we send a series of questionnaires out to the courts and see what funds they believe they will not spend during fiscal year 19-20. And so those funds will be made available to courts for reallocation during that period. I would also like to note that on Monday, the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee met and reviewed the federal drawdown recommendations that were also included in the application pursuant to the adopted Judicial Council funding methodology. So the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee reviewed and approved all of the funding or the federal drawdown allocations that are also included for the Child Support Commissioners on Exhibit A, Attachment A, and the Family Law Facilitator allocations on Attachment B. So with that, we are requesting that the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee recommend the allocations as provided on the report to the Council and those to be adopted at the July 9th Judicial Council meeting.
And those two recommendations are set forth at page 6. And thank you, Anna, very much for summarizing that. So the tables you have would indicate the allocations beginning July 1st, 2019 for both the Family Support Commissioners and the Family Law Facilitators. So those charts set out to the courts the money they would be receiving pursuant to the Judicial Council allocation. Any questions for Anna about any of this, these two recommendations, or any concerns in general?
I move that both be approved.
Okay. Judge Marshall,
this is Tanya. This is Tanya. I second it.
Okay, so Judge Marginis has moved both 1 and 2, correct, Judge?
Yes.
1 and 2 on page 6 be approved. Tanya, correct, you've seconded both of those?
Correct.
It's been moved and seconded that the two recommendations that set forth at page 6 of your materials be approved. With that, is there any additional discussion? I've listened, I see no hands nor voices on the phone. Oh, did I hear somebody asking a question? Nope, must have just been feedback. Is there any opposition to any member in the here present or on the phone to the motion that's been moved and seconded to adopt the two recommendations? Hearing no opposition, I'll deem the two recommendations, 1 and 2 at page 6, unanimously approved by this body. Thank you very much for that. That moves us
Judge Thompson, I checked in after roll call, so I am present.
Thank you, and I think Sherry has circled back, though she was with us before. I think, Sherry, Ms. Carter, you're back on?
I am on. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So now I think we have the full slate that we had before, and with that, we're moving now to item 2, which is allocations for the 2019-2020 Court-Appointed Dependency Council. We have Audrey Fancy from the Center for Families, Children, and Courts who will present on this. Again, this is, while obviously a different fund, it is somewhat akin to what we just discussed. However, this relates to allocations from the Trial Court Trust Fund for Court-Appointed Dependency Council. Both Judge Barton, who's present, and Sherry Carter on the phone are the Revenue and Expenditure Co-Chairs. They obviously in that committee, and we thank them for this and a lot of work they've done for our agenda today. put together significant work on this. You'll notice, and I hope I'm not stealing anything that Audrey's going to talk about, the two attachments that you have. All right.
Audrey, did you go to R&E, the revenue and expense
activity? We did not.
No, that was my error.
Never mind.
Sorry.
But Sherry and Judge Barton, thanks so much for all you do. Judge Barton's looking at me like, really?
But Sherry has been a lot on the issue over the years.
So we're moving along. I should probably just stop talking and refer this right over to Audrey for her comments. Audrey, take it.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm here today to request approval to bring fiscal year 2019-2020 court-appointed dependency council allocations to the July judicial council meeting. The current annual budget for court-appointed dependency council is $136.7 million. The governor's proposed 2019-20 budget released in January includes additional fundings for this purpose in the amount of $20 million, which, if contained in the final budget, would bring the total court-appointed council allocation to $156.7 million. Judicial Council staff presents two allocations, as I think the judge was mentioning, for approval, and I directed to submit the allocations to the Council based on the funding level in the final 2019 Budget Act. So attachment 2A on page 18 of your PDF file would be the allocation of the $136.7 million in the event there is no additional funding, including the Budget Act. Attachment 2B on page 19 of the PDF file would be the allocation of $156 million in the event the $20 million is included in the final Budget Act. These allocations are based on the methodology adopted in April 2016 with the recommendations of the Small Court Dependency Workload Working Group incorporated as approved by the Council at its meeting this January. And I would be happy to answer any questions or provide further information.
So, and I really appreciate the recommendation here, and this essentially would allow either this body or the council to pivot based upon what the governor ultimately includes or doesn't include in his budget related to this funding methodology, this fund,
correct,
these funds.
So we have the current amount, but we also have what is in the current budget, but would give the flexibility for the council to use the methodology with whatever funding level we ultimately receive.
And that was my question. So right now, the second is the hope of $20 million. If things get better and it's more than that, or there's a drawback from that, and even though it's less than 20, it's, for instance, 10, then that calculation could be performed very quickly by staff, and it would just be the table would be modified?
Correct.
Okay.
This is Kim Bartleson. I do have a question. What with the decision as far as the funding method that's been approved, what factor is there to take into account growth in caseloads that have occurred since the method was adopted in 16 and then and I'll use Humboldt as an example. The AG came in and made investigation and then a resolution with the child welfare, which has influxed the court with the welfare system of filing more cases, more hearings, and caseload has gone off the charts. I don't know if that's a scenario in other counties, but are there any factors to take those things into consideration with what method was adopted?
The methodology includes a three-year caseload average, so it looks at the caseload trends every 3 years, and if you look at some specific counties, some counties have had tremendous spikes in their filings in one, you know, perhaps even this last year in the last 2 years, and then so the rolling average has increased. Other counties have seen a decrease, so statewide, you'll actually note that last year there was 75,488 statewide caseload. This year it's 73,772. So statewide it's down, but you can really see some of the fluctuations within some of the courts, and I will note that Humboldt is a county that had been part of the small courts allocation because their caseload, the rolling caseload was under 400, but then now Humboldt actually is above that line. So there is a fluctuation also with that aspect of methodology.
Perfect. Thanks for clarifying.
And I think
Mike Planet, so I have a question. In the column F, so the difference from the prior year, I'm looking at 2A. So
yes.
Assuming no new funding, are the reductions there workload related, or is this like third year of the small court funding?
Third year is the same as the last 2 years. So in January, the council agreed to extend that the new methodology for the small court. So the smallest courts having one adjustment allocation, and then the small courts, anyone under 400 caseload, that is applied to those courts. Everyone else has the methodology adopted in 2016. Which is looking at caseloads over the last, everyone's looking at the last 3 years, but the rest of the state has just the based methodology.
So next fiscal year, not 1920, but 2021, will that column reflect just workload growth, or will that include the offset that going to the smaller courts?
I think one of the challenges, we accidentally didn't relabel put F over the 2019-20 allocation. The F is still on the difference from prior years, so that's actually really G, and we'll fix that for the council meeting. The allocation is based on the last 3 years' caseload. So the, and maybe, Mr. Penn, I'm not understanding the question. Sorry. So it won't change based on small courts anymore.
Okay.
So the small courts, the council has now stated that they want that methodology to continue in perpetuity. So they could change at some point, but the small court exception will go forward in next year's allocation in future years.
That answers my question. We're just trying to deal with the fluctuation, dealing with the attorney firms that we deal with, and you know, sometimes having to claw back money or change budgets can be problematic for them. And so I'm trying to be sympathetic in working with those firms that rely on this funding locally. And
right.
So just obviously predictability for them is just as important as it is for us. And so that was because just the nature of my question.
But as Bartleson mentioned, there really are some courts that have had tremendous fluctuations in this last year that, based on the county culture, their child welfare agency may be making significantly more filings. Other counties have seen the opposite. So the statewide trend really doesn't show the picture you have to deal with in negotiating with the firms, and appreciate that.
Judge Cope?
Just to respond to that, that was exactly the reason for the adoption of the three-year average, just like with the workload allocation. It was exactly that reason, to keep things somewhat stable for predictability issues.
And I know I'm stating the obvious, but the three, it's recalculated, it's a rolling average, so it's recalculated every year based upon the three prior years.
Correct.
So I know we all know that, but sometimes people listening in don't, they think it's every 3 years. We don't wait 3 years to recalculate it. We recalculate it every year based upon the 3 years average.
Correct.
We do exactly as Judge Cope said, to try to flatten those fluctuations a little bit. Okay. Any questions from any committee member in person or on the phone concerning the recommendations on item two? And that is, again, the 136.7, if there's no additional funding, on page 14 and page 15, what would, at least at this point, be hopefully anticipated to be $156.7 million if the $20 million that is proposed becomes a reality, though recognizing if that $20 million fluctuates up or down, the what would be submitted to the council would be based upon that new number.
Correct.
This is Judge Nadler. I've been on the phone. I just wanted to note that I've been listening.
Always good to have you, Judge Nadler. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're just concluding our I'm sorry, was that Judge Thompson?
It was, sorry.
Go ahead.
I just had a question. Looking at small court funding with the courts that still remain under the small court, looking at, let's say, attachment 2A, take Alpine and, or rather take Amador, Calaveras, Calusa. I think those are three that still fall within the small court categories.
Correct.
And looking under what should be column F, some have a decrease, some have an increase. With regard to that, is the column F the number then, given the freeze on the small courts, what they will have rolling forward in perpetuity, or are they still subject to the three-year rolling?
They're getting the three-year rolling, but the methodology allows for the smallest courts to bring up to BLS of one if that is necessary based on their number, and then freezing it for the other courts. So the caseloads do impact some of these small courts, and we did look carefully at it because I think it was Alpine that we looked carefully at. I think that their rolling average of cases went from 4 to 2. They have such a small caseload that does result in a larger money amount, but it's because I believe last time their average was a 4, and now we're down to 2 as their average. So in small counties, you also see odd fluctuations like that because it is, if you look at that last column, which would be column G, it is a $3,000 difference, which is significant given what their allocation is, but their rolling caseload has decreased.
I didn't mean to use Alpine, but I get the general idea is that there's a general cap, but it could go down from column F, or it could go slightly up from column F is what I'm hearing.
And the BLS could also change for some of the courts. If they, if a smaller court eventually goes over one, it wouldn't, they would not get adjusted above one.
Thank you.
Before I call for a motion, any other questions or concerns on this issue? All right, Kim?
I'm just wondering how, whether there's been any testimony in the Capitol over this $20 million. I haven't heard anything about the legislature inquiring into the $20 million proposal. Has there been any buzz about it at all?
This is Vlatko Fedorovich. There's been positive comments from advocates during public comment in the hearings. No issues were raised by the legislative analyst, really, you know, in terms of asking about it from the leg staff, not in hearings, it's been positive. So,
oh, good. All right.
Yeah, we're hopeful that it goes. I mean, it was from a historical perspective, this is something that the legislature, prior legislatures, were adding, and the prior administration was making to be an ask. So, for it to be forwarded in the governor's budget, I think is more proactive from the legislature's perspective and positive for them, since they've been looking to increase the funding in this area, and advocates have even suggested greater increases to fully fund the workload model.
Great, thank you.
The recommendation, we're not being presumptuous, but we are being optimistic. Okay. So is there a motion concerning those two recommendations?
I'll move approval.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded that the two recommendations as set forth, as I've noted on pages 14 and 15, be approved. Now that the motion is pending, any additional discussions or concerns or questions? Hearing none, is there any opposition to those folks in the room or on the phone to the two recommendations as moved? Hearing none, I'm going to deem those two recommendations as well unanimously approved. Thank you very much for all that work. Audrey, appreciate it. Nice presentation. So now we're moving to item three, which is the allocation from the IMF, the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund. And explaining my previous faux pas, it's what I get for arriving in the room late and having a cup of coffee on top of what I had for the drive up. So while I truly appreciate the work done by Judge Barton and Sherry Carter, it was done more on this item and the next item, frankly. And I do want to acknowledge the work they did. And now that there were to this item, as we open up the discussion, I'm going to turn to Jason for the discussion, but see if either Sherry or Judge Barton would like to add anything at all.
I think it was reviewed by the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee. You'll note in the recommendations on page 21 of the materials, there's alternative scenarios posited. First is the recommended allocations, assuming about $8 million in BCPs are enacted. And then a fallback second recommendation in the event that all are part of those are not approved to allocate the funding. And with that, I turn it over to Mr. Haas.
Good morning. I'm Jason Haas, a senior analyst in budget services. I'm going to present item 3-2, which is the 2019-20 Improvement and Modernization Fund allocations.
And you have Donna Newman with you?
And Donna Newman, yes.
Thank you.
I'd like to start by directing your attention to attachment 3A, which is page 22 in your handouts. Columns D through F and rows 1 through 42 represent the allocations for 2018 and 19, the currently approved allocations. Columns G through I represent the requested allocations for 19 and 20, and columns J and K represent the dollar and percentage change respectively from 1819 to 1920. Towards the bottom of the sheet, rows 45 through 51 are adjustments due to budget change proposals that we just heard a little bit about, and we'll discuss later in more detail, but the highlights are IT has three pending BCPs, one for the CMS replacement phase, one for the Futures Commission, and one for digitizing court records. These would all be general fund transfers into the IMF. The Phoenix Roadmap BCP affects IT and branch accounting and procurement. This would shift $3.2 million of current IMF expenditures out to the general fund if approved. And legal services has one BCP that affects the litigation management program and trial court's transactional assistance program. This one would also shift about $5.1 million of current IMF expenditures out to the general fund. In summary, the requested allocation for approval is $80.1 million in 1920. This is an increase of $22.7 million over 18-19 IMF allocations, and of that $22.7 million increase, $20.1 million is directly related to the pending BCPs. If the BCPs are denied, an increase of $8.4 million over our recommendation would be needed. That would take our total recommendation up to $88.5 million. However, the outcome of the pending BCPs will be known before the Judicial Council meets in July, and the fund condition statement can sustain either request, whether it's the lower or higher amount, and we'll get to that more later in the presentation. The bottom portion of Attachment 3A on page 23 is a summary of the total allocations requested by office. The total request allocations for 1920 are $5.7 million for state operations and $74.4 million for local assistance. What we just gave you is detail in preparation for the item, which starts on page 18 of your packet. We'll start with audit services has requested approximately $410,000. This is an increase of $40,000 over 18-19 level funding, in addition, additional increases due to staffing costs. Branch accounting and procurement is requesting approximately $139,000. This is a decrease of $1.36 million. The allocation is for staff that supports procurement needs of the courts. The reduction of $1.36 million is due to the expected approval of the 2019-20 Phoenix Roadmap BCP. This would shift expenditures from the IMF to the general fund. If the BCP is not approved, an additional allocation of up to $1.53 million will be needed. Center for Families, Children, and the Courts request approximately $5.9 million. This is an increase of $663,000 over 18-19 level funding. Of that $663,000, $520,000 is for the Shriver Civil Council, and $130,000 for the Court Interpreter Program, which is actually a fund shift from the Court Operations Service merger that happened recently. Outside of those two issues, the actual funding level for Center for Families, Children, and Courts is unchanged from previous year. For the Shriver Civil Council, the $520,000 we mentioned, there was a change of civil code procedure that temporarily diverted funds in the 17-18 year into the IMF. These funds are segregated within the IMF and can only be used for that purpose. And so CFCC is asking to use those funds in 1920. Center for Judiciary Education and Research is requesting approximately $1.2 million, and this represents no change from 18-19 funding. Budget Services is requesting approximately $366,000. This is an increase of $28,000 from current year, and the change is due to staffing. Human Resources is requesting approximately $23,000. This represents no change from current year funding. Information Technology is requesting approximately $68.1 million. This is an increase of $26.4 million over current year, and almost all of the increase is due to pending BCPs. Those BCPs will provide general fund transfers into the IMF. Excluding the increased amounts from the BCPs, the allocation is actually lower by about $370,000, as there were savings from projects that are either ending or had one-time funding in the current year. Legal Services is requesting approximately $3.9 million. This is a savings of $2.9 million, and the reduction is due to the litigation management BCP that would shift expenditures out of the IMF and into the general fund. If the BCP is denied, an increase of about $5.1 million and authorization would be needed. Excluding the BCP, the allocation amount is higher by about $2.1 million from past year. This is because of pending litigation, which may or may not result in expense to the IMF. This $2.1 million would result in budget year allocation savings should the IMF not be responsible for the payment or if the payments are deferred to future years. I'd like to now direct your attention to Attachment 3C on page 27. This is the fund condition statement for the IMF. If you look at column C, row 26, the estimated fund balance for 18-19 is $11.6 million, and the estimated fund balance in 19-20 is about $9.8 million, and that's off of our recommendation of $80.1 million. So what I want to point out here is, in the worst-case scenario, all of the pending BCPs are denied, and we would ask the Judicial Council for the higher amount of the $88.5 million, we would still have an ending fund balance of about $1.5 million if that were to occur. So under either scenario, the fund condition statement is solvent and can handle the higher requested amount if needed. Looking to the future of 2020 and 21 and beyond, the fund is no longer projected to be insolvent. as we've discussed in past years. The Judicial Council staff and the Department of Finance have continued to work on this issue, and the pending BCPs before the legislature right now will resolve the structural imbalance now and for the future. In conclusion, the recommendation on page 21 is to approve the 2019-20 allocations from the IMF under either scenario of either full or partial BCP approval. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and we also have representatives from the different offices on the line.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Starting off with Mike.
Yep. Just a quick question. In referencing the fund condition statement page, you indicated that if, in fact, we had to take the $8-plus million, we would bring the fund balance down to a million and change. Is that also fair for the out years 2021 and 21-22? In other words?
So those balances would also be lower by about $8.5 million from what's pending, from what's shown on the sheet now.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions, concerns from either those in the room or those on the phone? Again, the recommendations are set forth at page 21 of 61, and I appreciate the way those are summarized as well. That's what we'll be considering today to approve. We're moving along at a more than efficient pace, so I'm not trying to discourage questions at all, though, again, I think this is a reflection of the prior work that was done by our RNE members. Mike Planet?
Just a comment. For those who have been around long enough, it's great to see the pendulum swing this way, after because we had some painful meetings some years back, and so it's a great relief and great credit, I think, that that the IMF is finally looks like you know in the out of the red for good, hopefully.
And I would add to that just that it all, you know, contingent from a going forward basis that those budget change proposals that are before the legislature are adopted. And the, sort of as we talked about the dependency council before, so there's a preview of the budget update might as well it's relevant to the conversation. That the only issues that have been raised as far as the two proposals for Phoenix and for the litigation management have been more global about IMF and how it fits into the overall fines and fees issues that are before the legislature and the administration. And so it's good that I think that they've had that conversation. There's been some direct questions, as you know, Mike Roddy was at the pre-hearings and the hearings talking about the those funds and the question being put to the administration about what are the strategies, because there's many funds that are impacted by declining revenues, not just the IMF. So no issues with the specific BCPs, just about global fines and fees, which is always a welcome conversation on our part.
Kim?
I just have a question about the transfer of the testing component of new interpreters to CFCC, and I see that that change was made effective in March. Is that because of a reorganization at the Judicial Council with Bob Lowney's retirement? Is that what's happening? Is
that
going to be the permanent home for this testing component?
Yes, correct.
Okay, and it just doesn't seem like it's a natural fit with the mission of CFCC to include the interpreter testing in that division.
I couldn't comment on that.
So can the reorganization put the interpreter program
under? So the entire interpreter program, not just the testing piece?
Correct.
Right.
Okay, still seems, I mean, just from the outside looking in, does not seem to be really aligned with the mission of Center for Families, Children, and the Courts to have a whole interpreter program, which mostly serves criminal, you know, the criminal side of the house, to have it located in CFCC seems kind of awkward to me.
Any other questions or concerns regarding the recommendation set forth at page 21? Is there a motion?
Mr. Planet will move to approve the recommendations.
I'll second it.
Planet moves. Judge Jackson seconds to approve the recommendations as stated at page 21 that have been summarized for the group. Now that it's been moved and seconded, open for discussion. Any further questions or discussion on those two recommendations? All right. Then I will call for a vote. Is there any opposition to the recommendations, either by those present in the room or those on the phone, as set forth at page 21? Waited, paused, I see, and I hear no opposition. Therefore, the recommendations set forth at page 21, items 1 and 2, are deemed unanimously approved. Okay. Randy has a very important question about shuttles.
Good
anyone need a shuttle?
Not that we're anticipating. The meeting's not ending yet, but
no.
You guys are remarkably quiet today, okay. Which is a good thing. We're good. Okay.
Thank you.
Important business to attend to. All right. We're now moving to item 4, which, in contrast to the IMF, is now a similar discussion for allocations from the Trial Court Trust Fund and Trial Court allocations, again, for the upcoming 2019-2020 budget year. Melissa is with us to present. Before we do that, I just want to make a couple sort of high flyover comments. One, I acknowledge Judge Barton and Sherry Carter on the prior item and even the item before that. But on this one as well, but I think it's appropriate to acknowledge all the R&E members. I don't usually do this, but this has been a lot of work that R&E has put in, and it's appreciated. Rebecca Fleming, Judge Barton, Judge Blum, Judge Buckley, Judge Fannin, Judge Nadler, Judge McCabe, Sherry Carter, Mike Planet, Brian Taylor, Kim Turner, and David Yamasaki. I don't think I've left any R&E members off. And while all the subcommittees are very busy, you in particular, I think, for all the work you've put in related to this item as well. Again, I'm just going to go over a couple of these high flyover items, and I'm sure that Melissa is going to drill down much more on this. I'm on page 31 of the materials. These are allocations related to work year value changes recommended by WAC, the Workload Assessment Advisory Committee. Those will be explained. The council is anticipated to approve those recommendations in July, which will address the change in the workload formula. As we have previously approved, we being TICBAC, the additional revenues that are set forth as relevant funding sources in addition to the civil assessments are reflected in column O on attachment 4B. This revenue source is the net of all those sources less the maintenance of effort and other approved obligations. And I know that other approved obligations is somewhat of a moving target for some of us. I will note that column O, and I'm going to address this when I call for the motion. I do not believe that the figures in column O will change, but we have to be very careful here to make sure that all of the material that was considered in the calculation of those materials, of those figures, is in fact available. And therefore, when we move forward, I will be asking that the motion exclude column O. So the motion, the recommendation is set forth to approve, will exclude column O only to allow that material to then be made available, and then there'll be a telephonic motion with all of us to simply then approve column O. And I know that's highly technical, but we have to be very careful when we approve these figures because we have inappropriately received comments in the past. How do we know where these came from? And while we're confident in the calculation, we have to be transparent in the calculation. So when you hear me say that, I didn't want you to be confused as why we will be scheduling an action by email to consider that very precise issue. And Melissa, I hope I haven't stepped on any more of your presentation.
Yeah.
And I'm going to turn it over to you.
Excuse me, Judge Conklin, could you just say that one more time?
A little bit
slower.
Go ahead.
You sound like the court reporter assigned to my courtroom.
Basically, when the TICMAC approved these revenue sources to be included in the calculations, we only provided one page or two pages of general ledger accounts when there's actually 10 pages of general ledger.
GL work that we
Yes. So is this a technical oversight where the pages weren't all included in the materials? We need to have the committee approve it with the public document showing all the general ledger accounts, not just two pages.
But I got confused, because I think just time when you mentioned something about less MOEs.
No, I was just summarizing what O generally represents and how those figures came about.
The GL work, and then what the committee did last time is say all the GLs less the MOE obligations, less debt service obligations.
So, Judge Conklin, this is Sherry Carter. As you know, I led the very large work that led to column O. And I just want the group to know that it started with 4 courts and was expanded to about 20. This was reviewed by financial experts. Maybe it's even more than 20 courts. that got into the weeds to make the final recommendations back to the CEOs of the four original courts. So I have to say I'm a little disappointed we're excluding all, because there has been over a year's work in trying to evaluate this. Isn't it possible to just provide the GLs that are included in O by the end of the meeting today? Or do we feel strongly that we have to do more than that?
Might not be a bad idea. So we'll try, Sherry. I appreciate that, and that's efficiency. And again,
it's a good idea.
Yeah, so I'm looking at Lucy and looking at Brandy, and they're gonna once again move mountains to try to get that done. But I think that's a great suggestion. So I want to complete this discussion. I want to allow Melissa to do her work, and then maybe what we'll do at the end of the discussion is we'll defer a final vote on this until later in the day, and then that way we can close the loop.
Or if you want to take a motion without O and then come back if we have it and include O at the end, I could probably find the materials because I have the final report probably somewhere on my computer that shows all of the GLs. But
yeah, I have it.
Okay. It was so thoroughly reviewed by so many experts, financial experts in at least 20, maybe 25 courts, that I would be surprised if anyone had any questions, because it was small, medium, and large courts that were included in this analysis. So that's really all. I'll mute my phone again, but if there's a way to get this done, I just would hate to not see this hard work get approved. But anyway, I'm going back on mute.
Please don't, but sure, I appreciate that suggestion. I think that's a much more efficient way to handle it. And you use the phrase question these figures. You're right. I don't think it's a matter of questioning them. I think it's a matter of providing the transparency behind them to reflect the work that was done by the CFOs and all those other experts. So you're right. I think all we're trying to do is make sure that if anybody were to look at this to try to figure out how we came to those numbers, they'd have all the information needed to do that. And I think we can satisfy that very quickly. And now that we've been talking for 10 minutes without presenting it, unless there's anything else, I'm going to turn to Melissa so she can present this. And Melissa, who do you have with you?
Thank you. I'm Melissa Ng, but I'm Senior Budget Analyst with Judicial Council Budget Services. I also have Michelle Allen, a Budget Supervisor, and Donna Newman is still here. She's also Budget Supervisor for Judicial Council. So I'll be presenting on Item 4, allocations from the Trial Court Trust Fund, and then also the Trial Court allocations for 2019-20. So presenting to take back for consideration are the preliminary 2019-20 allocations from the Trial Court Trust Fund totaling $2.21 billion, $68.8 million in general fund for employee benefits, and the workload formula allocation of $2.03 billion. Just to go quickly over the base discretionary and non-discretionary funding, for following five programs, the R&E subcommittee recommendation for program 0140010 for the Judicial Council totals $3.9 million. This is reflected in line 55 of Attachment 4A, with details on the programs reflected in lines 26 through 32. The TCTF base and R&E subcommittee recommendation for program 0150010, support for the operation of trial courts, totals $1.93 billion, is reflected on line 56 of Attachment 4A. This includes lines 15, 18, 20, and 21 on adjustments and other allocations and new or changed allocations, and line 46 through 51 on details for R&E recommendations totaling $38.4 million for allocations for reimbursements for this program. The next is the R&E subcommittee recommendation for program 0150011 for court-appointed dependency counsel, totaling $156.7 million, which is reflected on line 57 of Attachment 4A. This includes the $20 million in new funding that is proposed in the 2019 governor's budget. And a program 0150037, the court interpreters program recommendation in the amount of $109.8 million, reflected on line 58 of Attachment 4A. This includes both the base of $108.9 million and an increase of $873,486 related to benefits for the 2018-19 provided in the Governor's May revise. And lastly, we have the R&E subcommittee recommendation for program 015-0095 expenses on behalf of the trial courts, totaling $10 million, which is reflected on line 59 of attachment 4A, with details on the programs included reflected on lines 35 through 41. So moving on to the workload formula allocation on attachment 4B, the workload calculation includes allocations, revenues, and adjustments for a total of $2 billion in the workload allocation that is counted towards the workload formula. Attachment 4B, column A, details by court the adjusted base allocation that was presented in attachment 4A, line 7. And columns B through G details the non-base adjustments used to calculate the workload allocation. This includes the 2017-18 automated record-keeping micrographics revenues, 2% automation funds, and self-help, as well as exclusion of costs related to security and SJOs in the base that are typically not counted towards the workload formula. Just to highlight some of the changes, the prior year allocation formula detailed in columns J through P, these include the reductions for SJO conversions totaling $1.7 million. This is the full year cost adjustment to the prorated 3.1 reduction for 18-19 conversions that was reflected in line 3 of attachment 4A. We also have an adjustment to the SJO allocation totaling $2.3 million. This is based on 18-19-7A information. So this is columns G and K show the reductions that we're just backing it out of the workload allocation, but we're adding it back on the other side in column U under other information. We also have a difference of $172,579 related to automated record keeping and micrographic collections. This is the difference between the 2016-17 and 17-18 collections. And a cost change of $21.9 million related to non-interpreter employee benefits for 2018-19 based on the May revise. We also have an allocation of $8.7 million in discretionary funding that was previously part of the $10 million allocated for 18-19 for court reporters and family law. This allocation is based on courts that have reported that they are fully staffed for court reporters and family law, and is being included in the workload allocation since it is now considered discretionary funding. The remaining $1.2 million is outside of the workload allocation in column X under other allocations. The 2017-18 revenues collected is totals $108 million. This is in column O. So this is the new for 2019-20 based on recommendation from FMS and TICBAC on revenue streams that are included to count towards the workload need. And lastly, we have 2019-20 workload formula funding floor adjustments for two courts to meet the base funding of $800,000. This adjustment totals $58,504 for those two courts, with all other courts sharing in the pro rata reductions. Just to go over some of the pending items that we have, due to timing, preliminary reduction for trial court reserves above the 1% cap will not be available for TICBAC consideration prior to the council in July. However, the final allocation reductions will be considered by TICBAC prior to the recommendations to judicial council before the February 2020 meeting. Also, the allocation for court-appointed dependency council collections programs that is pending is line 50 on attachment 4A, will be brought to TICBAC once final 2018-19 collections are known. And there will also be a prorated reduction related to a pending request from Humboldt Superior Court for a distribution of $117,000 from the $10 million state-level reserve in the current year, which it will be considered by the Judicial Council at its May 17 meeting. And then we also have a few caveats. Any changes to the appropriations provided in the 2019 Budget Act may impact any of the allocations presented today. Additionally, the resource assessment study work year value recommendation will be considered by the council on May 17th. And the workload formula in column R currently in attachment 4B reflects the recommended year value. And as was briefly mentioned earlier, the revenue reflected in column O of attachment 4B includes additional relevant funding sources in addition to civil assessments. And this recommendation of including additional revenue streams in the workload allocation will be considered at by the council at its July meeting. And lastly, I just want to note that the ad hoc subcommittee of trial courts is working through all O&E accounts to determine which will be included in the O&E calculation. This is in addition to developing a recommendation on the CPI calculation for the escalation of O&E costs. These materials currently do not include this work, which is scheduled to be considered by the council in July as well. So moving on to the last piece is attachment 4C. This is the current TCTF fund condition statement. The projected 1920 ending TCTF fund balance is $57.9 million, which is reflected in column E, row 25. Of that amount, $26.5 million is either statutorily restricted or restricted by the council. That's in column E, row 26, and the estimated unrestricted fund balance is $31.4 million and is column E, row 27. The estimated preliminary 2019-20 allocation request totaling $2.21 billion can be supported by the TCTF based on the current revenue projections and the 2018-19 projected savings. And that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions. We also have offices on the line from the Judicial Council that can answer any questions on Attachment 4A.
Melissa, thank you very much. So I'll open up the questions in just a moment, but I want to make sure. So these numbers are still, this is still a work in progress. I mean,
yes.
These numbers may, based upon input from courts, based upon other information provided, these numbers may ultimately be modified based upon the work that's going on.
Yeah, so there's a number of things going to council in May and in July that
okay.
are pending.
And Lucy, Ms. Fogarty has just sent out to all of us the material that Sherry referred to. So you now all have it. It's at the bottom of the email that you're getting is an attachment for all of those GLs that we discussed. And so I am making, and I feel that based upon Ms. Carter's recommendation, we can move forward with the recommendations, including column O, recognizing that even figures in column O can change based upon other courts' input. So with that, questions, Mr. Yamasaki?
Yes, thanks, Judge Conklin. David Yamasaki, I had a question regarding the reference that you made to the fund balance that's in the trial court trust fund. There have been a couple of items that we took up today. I think one relates to the possibility that if we do not receive BCP funding on some of the proposals in the item just presented earlier, that that would result in a reduction in the fund balance of $8 million. Is that correct?
That was in the IMF funding. This is a trial court trust fund.
Right, but the IMF, the proposal would be to shift the cost to the TCTF if the funding is not provided in the budget act. Is that
the BCP,
misunderstanding?
Yeah, the BCP's shift the funding to the general fund.
Oh, the general fund. Okay, as opposed to the chocolate. My apologies. So the other thing is, well, I'll bring it up on the next item. That's fine.
Okay. Further questions? This is obviously another one of our important decisions. Any questions, concerns, anybody on the phone, the recommendations that set forth? And so I may have confused everybody earlier, but we've now closed that loop. And so based upon the suggestion of Sherry, and thank you very much for the work that Lucy and Brandy did as they were typing furiously during the discussion, the presentation, for getting that material available. So now we have all that supporting GL documentation that Mr. Planet referred to reflect the calculations in O. And so that's why I'm withdrawing any previous comment or confusion I may have created by that mention. We're now going to move forward with the recommendation. There, column O would be included, again, recognizing that the behind-the-scenes work may cause changes to some of these figures. Questions, concerns, anything at all? A lot of work being reflected here. Mr. Rotten, pardon me. Go ahead, Judge Cope. I'm so used to hearing from Mike Riding Mike Planet. That was a compliment.
Well, then, thank you. So all I would say is I would have been comfortable waiting to review it, but I'm comfortable making a motion at this point to adopt the recommendations on page 28.
Okay, so I'll interpret that as a motion from Judge Cope to move the recommendations at page 28 of 61 that are highlighted with dots there
the $2.21 billion, the $68.8 million, and the $2.032 billion is set forth. That motion has been made. Is there a second?
Second.
By Judge Gabe. Moved and seconded, and now that's been moved and seconded, opening up the recommendation, the motion for any further discussion, comments, or concerns, including those on the phone. Hearing none, I'm going to call for any opposition to the motion to approve the recommendations as set forth on page 28. Seeing and hearing no opposition, I'm deeming the motion's unanimously approved. And I think we need to take a break. So we've been moving at a very appropriate pace. For those of you on the phone, I hope we're all caught up for you. I think I'm very comfortable taking a quick break just to allow folks to sort of catch their breath. Let's call it at 15 minutes. So we'll reconvene at 11:25. We'll come back.
So are we taking a break before this motion, or are we finishing that motion?
The motion's been moved and approved. The motion for item 4 has been moved and approved.
Thank you.
Okay. Deemed unanimously approved through no opposition. So item 4 is concluded. We'll move to item 5 right after the break. And let's keep it right at 15 minutes so those folks on the phone can plan. Yes, we will start at 11:25. Thank you.
We're on break 15 minutes until 11:25.
You leave my bra out on the dresser. You leave the pillow. That would be stuff on top of my
shoulder. Oh, he didn't even go in the room.
Oh, thank goodness.
To the top of the stairs. Pointed to the top. He looked up. He said, we're good.
Dude.
Never.
started in just a second, so we remain on time.
We are on the air.
We are on the air, so welcome back. I would note that we're starting promptly, as we said we would, at 11:25 after a brief 15-minute opportunity to breathe and get catch our breaths. And that takes us now to item 5 on our agenda. And item 5 is the interpreter program shortfall methodology. You have materials set forth at pages 38 and 39 and further in your materials. There are, as your materials set out, and this is described here essentially as two alternatives to present to the council. So the recommendation is at page 41 and 42, and those are, and 42 specifically, option 1 and option 2. And while I clearly am open to those options, I'm suggesting that this advisory body fill exactly that role as we present this to the council. And our advice to the council is, in fact, that we would describe option 1 as our recommendation. So the recommendation to the council would be to authorize the one-time allocation of unrestricted fund balance of 13.5 from TCTF, and an alternative to option 1 is what described as option 2, and that is the reduction of 13.5 via a pro rata reduction down, so to speak, to the trial courts. So as we go through this discussion, at the end of the day, my suggestion will be that the recommendation is modified in that way, though obviously I'm just one member of a very vibrant advisory committee. And with that, Cottrell is present to discuss and present this to us before we have further consideration. So Cottrell, and I do, as I acknowledge the R&E members, I'm going to acknowledge Judge Buckley and Rebecca Fleming next to me, the Funding Methodology Subcommittee members, and all the members on that subcommittee who put in significant work addressing this issue. Thank you both very much. Also, I remind you, and you now have it, the written public comment related to this issue from Judge Rodriguez. Cottrell?
Thank you, Judge Conklin. As mentioned, item 5 is the consideration of options from the Funding Methodology Subcommittee for recommendation to the Judicial Council to address a projected 1920 shortfall and development of a methodology to manage anticipated ongoing shortfalls. To provide a little background, I ask that you please refer to page 40. Those were the initial projections which were first provided to TCBEC at its August 14, 2018 meeting. Those have been updated to include more complete prior year actuals and the most current COLA data available. If you please refer to page 41, you'll see the change in fund balance between August 2018 and January 2019. That change in the fund balance is the result of a staff audit of appropriations and actual expenditures that posted against the court interpreter program in the JC's financial book of record, which we went back to 2009-2010. This review resulted in an additional $3.6 million for the beginning fund balance in fiscal year 17-18. That being said, appropriated court interpreter funds continue to be insufficient to reimburse trial courts for program costs. The interpreter ad hoc subcommittee recommended to FMS at its February 28th meeting to use unrestricted TCTF fund balance to address the projected 1920 shortfall, which currently is projected at $13.5 million. However, recognizing the interpreter program's importance to the council, FMS carried that two options move forward to TCBEC. Those are the two options that are presented today, with a recommendation that both be presented to the council for consideration. In addition to those options, 1 and 2, FMS also recommends that the ad hoc subcommittee continue development of a methodology to address the anticipated ongoing shortfalls and review the existing methodology. However, the continued development of a methodology to address the anticipated ongoing shortfalls does not need to be presented to the council for consideration. And with that, I'll open the floor for questions. Yes.
Zocco? I just want to add, as part of our budget change proposal that were submitted last fall, we're continuing that work and have updated and provided the updated figures of the $13.5 million to the Department of Finance. We've had very in-depth questions and answers, and discussions of methodologies. And so, you know, we've had, I think, let's say, constructive and positive conversations. The May revision is anticipated to be released no later than May 14th, which is 12 days from today. And so we would be hopeful that there'd be some, you know, clarity on where we're going. But I think we still probably should, as a body, be giving the council a firm recommendation. And I think that the recommendation to use the TCTF fund balance in light of the updated fund balances, I think, would be my staff recommendation to the committee, so that we at least have something until that time, you know, sort of moved out of this body.
So as we did with our previous recommendations, we give them the ability to pivot. In other words, if there's no new funding, this is what we recommend. But if optimism prevails and there's additional funding, then they have different alternatives.
And we could revisit in a positive way as necessary.
Judge Conklin, this is Sherry Carter. May I ask a question?
Sure.
So with Zlatko's comments in mind about working for a BCP for the interpreter shortfall and for the expansion that we've all been encouraged to do, does it make sense to move this decision item to our July meeting so that we would have that information when we review the request? Does it make sense to postpone this vote until after we see the May revise?
So if you're asking me directly, my response would be no, in the sense of I understand the rationale behind that. But on the other hand, the council's meeting in 2 weeks on this, and I don't think as an advisory committee we fulfill our role to the council about providing them from a budget perspective the alternatives available. So rather than take this off the table and set it over into July, I would strongly suggest that we make the decision today and then give it to the council to ultimately, all we're doing is advising. And Sherry, I understand the thought process behind your question, but to answer you directly, I would suggest that in fact the committee make a decision today, and if we want to modify the options to be a recommendation TCTF with an alternative to the trial courts, I'd be open to that.
Just so you're aware that if this is delayed, that wouldn't be able to go to the council until that September meeting, actually.
Did you hear that, Sherry? So it couldn't be.
I don't see any way we
can delay this, because it would have to go to the September meeting, which would be well beyond the July allocation date. So I don't think
it is a little different, because this is a reimbursable, not an allocation, and it doesn't all happen with July 1. So I do understand that. It feels like we'd have more information, and it was just a proposal. But I think that the feeling in the room is that we should make a final recommendation.
I learned that from you a long time ago, Sherry. I really appreciate it. Thanks, Rebecca, and then Kim.
So I with respect to Sherry's comments, I understand the uncertainty, but I think considering the need for our colleagues to be able to plan and understand what the possibilities are in the coming year, I would be prepared to make a motion to move the recommendations forward, prioritizing option one over option two, if that would be acceptable to the group.
If I can make one little suggestion so that option two would not look like a recommendation, can we use the wording such as other alternatives considered, so it gives a little bit more flexibility?
And that's Judge Jackson. So that was what I intended to state, and you stated it better than I did. So the recommendation would be TICMAC recommends an authorization of a one-time allocation, and I'm just reading right from option one. So rather than option one, that would be the recommendation of TICMAC. And then the council does prefer, and I think we have a responsibility to provide an alternative to them to the recommendation. So an alternative to the recommendation. And Rebecca, is that your motion?
That would be my motion.
Okay. So option one would be recaptioned recommendation, and option two would be recaptioned alternative.
Great.
So David?
Well, I was going to second the motion made by Rebecca with the modification as expressed.
Moved and seconded. Now, Kim, discussion?
Yeah, I just had a question about the on page 40, the projected expenditures at January of 2019. I see that, you know, certainly the 17-18 is, you know, is sunk cost. We know what that is now. But looking at the out years, 19-20 and 2021, the criminal, mandated criminal line shows really explosive growth in that area. And I recognize that, you know, California has been in a long, long-term criminal justice reform posture and has had to relook at many, many, many cases and resentence them and review them and reevaluate them and so forth. But I'm wondering if the sort of historical trend of those costs going up to address things like SB 1437 and Prop 66 and what have you is being factored into the thinking for the 2021 projections for mandated criminal, because it does not, I mean, I just, I don't know if that was part of the thinking or if that's just simply what's expected, you know, what's expected to happen in our criminal world. So, Cattrall, did you actually figure out how to do these projected expenditures?
Well, the projections take into account prior year actuals, historicals as well, but to that specific question, I'd have to go back and look and see how those were reflected in the court's true-up templates, which is what we use to project on those out years.
Okay. Because it does, it's, I don't know if I'm the only one that believes that it's a little bit high, but I expect there to be these blips in years where we have, you know, either voter referendum or new legislation or whatever. But I would hope that those hearings and resentencings or whatever would drop off and then we'd get back to sort of business as usual. But that's not the way this trend line looks to me.
I guess the best case scenario would be contrary to what we've been experiencing for a lot of years, having too much rather than not enough.
Yeah.
So it's been moved and seconded, but I want to make sure everybody has a chance for any discussion related to the modified recommendation that we're considering.
This is Tanya. I have a question. As to the second secondary issue would be a reduction to all the trial courts. Would that be based against a historic utilization or just would, you know, the process stop funding? What's the intent?
Did you want to, David? We were part of the work group that put that together.
Right. And so, Tanya, a few things that we were trying to look at is getting a sense of how the reduction would be absorbed by the different courts. And it is, to answer your question, aligned with what the level of reimbursements had been for a period of time. So I recognize the process is really a reimbursement as opposed to an allocation, but it's very challenging to give everybody a sense of what a reduction of $13.5 million would mean to a specific court. So it's ballpark. It's something that we use in Orange as we're trying to project what our expenses are going to be. It's been consistent year after year, and we, again, wanted to give courts as much information as possible so that planning could be started to, you know, get a sense of where things would have to change relative to the court.
So this may be an unpopular statement, but I wanted to just make sure that if, in fact, that were an option that was considered and then adopted, that we were looking at something that was with some historic perspective, because I know there will be courts that roll back their services and interpreters rather than try to absorb that cost. I know that will happen. So I just want to be sure for those folks that may be leaning that direction that they have some basis from which, you know, to decide what cases are going to have interpreters outside of mandatory ones.
Fair statement. Okay.
And Tanya, that comment is in light of the recommendation that, in fact, these have now turned into a recommendation with an alternative versus two options, right?
Right. But I still want to make sure that, you know, going forward, that people have an idea if it's based on historical, you know, average or whatever has been expended by each individual court, that it's not just going to be, you know, he who gets to the line first gets the money and, you know, those down the road just get cut off and have an expectation of absorbing that without any idea that they have some kind of, I hate to use the word guarantee, but that they can count on some proportional amount of that money.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. I want to make sure there's plenty of opportunity to engage in discussion on this. If anybody else has any further concerns, requests, or questions before I call for a vote. I've waited. I've paused. I see none in the room. I hear none on the phone. So, therefore, is there any opposition to the motion to recommend to the council what was originally captioned as option one, this is on page 42, and provide to the Judicial Council an alternative, what was originally captioned as option two would be an alternative to the council. Any opposition to that motion that's been moved and seconded? Hearing
I'm
none,
going
so
to oppose.
Okay.
Sorry, this is Tanya. I'm going to oppose based on not having that clarification that I asked about.
Okay, so we show that there is one vote in opposition to the motion. I want to make sure I've provided plenty of opportunity for any others. Hearing and seeing none, we'll show that the recommendation is carried with one opposition to provide those that recommendation alternative to the council at its May meeting. All right. So I'm going to move, if there's no objection here, right to item six. Just to keep on going, because I think we're being very efficient with our time. Okay. Unless anybody wants to, in fact, take a nutrition break before option six, I'm just the chair. But let's keep moving. I'm seeing people saying, let's keep going. So we're now moving to item six, which is a prioritization of the trial court budget change proposals. So the BCPs are set forth, the budget change proposals are set forth in your materials at page 47 through 61. I've got Rebecca, the vice chair here, Rebecca Fleming with me. We're both presenting on this, and just sort of to give you a background of the timeline, we've put substantial work into this. So this is the budget change proposals that are going forward for the 2021, not for 1920. That's in the hopper. So the recommendations here, while there may be some optimistic overlap to what's currently going on, the recommendations that we're addressing here for the BCPs or for the budget year that's year to come, and that is 2021. So I want to make sure everybody's clear on that. The table at page 47 that you have lists the BCP concepts that were submitted by TICBAC. Prior to our vote on January 21st, we took a brainstorming approach to this. Remember, we started off with about 26 concepts. We then opened it up to a vote. We all voted as to our top three. Those votes were then tallied, and the top three resulted in these. They were then forwarded to the Judicial Branch Budget Committee, and then back to us now for final approval. Regards setting forth the table at page 47 for our consideration. We also will be talking today about table two, and that's set forth at page 49, which are all the other BCP concepts that sort of we're asked to take a look at. And I'll remind you what we've done in the past is we've essentially ranked our internal BCPs, and then we've looked at the other BCPs from the lens of, are there any of these that we do not think should be supported generally, but we don't rank them? We just say those all look either viable or not viable to us, and therefore we would pass them on for consideration versus ranking those that are set forth on table one.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, Rebecca, anything else to add?
You did great.
So, questions, comments, thoughts, Wow. I hope that's a good sign. So, again, and I don't know, Zaka, if you want to add anything about the BCP process that I've talked about, I want to make sure I didn't get it wrong. Today's my day to get things wrong.
No, I think it's been great work and some important key issues. We're going to have, you know, assuming that JBBC and ultimately the council put this forward, we're going to have our work cut out for us with the Department of Finance, and that's welcome work given the implications on access to justice.
And so what happens is that if we do approve this, and as the chair, with everybody's understanding and permission, as the chair of TICBAC, then I would go to the JBBC meeting that's going to be held a week from Tuesday and present on behalf of all of us exactly what we decide today. So it will not be just an informal submission. I'll do it in person, because I enjoy the drive from the president of San Francisco so much. Go ahead, Jim.
I have a question about Table 2. So I see that there's sort of a sponsoring group that has developed the BCPs, except language access expansion, as an NA in the ranking column. And does that mean it does not have a sponsor, doesn't have a home?
It's the
footnote that I should be reading?
It's not a footnote. It's just that they didn't have anything else to compete against as they were submitting. It was the only one. So the other committees, they had more than one BCP, so they were identifying which ones they were prioritizing.
Okay, that's helpful. Thanks.
So it's not – okay. It doesn't need to be ranked if it's the only one.
Got it. Oh, and Kim, for G, which is on page 50.
Oh, yeah, that one also is not ranked.
And that one, they chose not to rank. So
that would be the Facilities Modification Committee. And
It came back – it came a little bit after – the facilities groups came because it was a reaction to some conversations that happened here about state responsibility for lease space. And this is sort of a revisit.
Maybe just for clarity in this handout, it would be good to, instead of putting NA, I mean, if this goes to the council, this is the document that goes forward, it might be nice to either footnote that or state that the reason it's not ranked is because it's the only one in the category or something.
No competing alternative.
Or no other priorities identified or something like that.
Judge Cox? Yes. I noticed that this is an action item, and the options for us to discuss are listed on page 50 at the bottom, as for Table 1, those being review and prioritize the BCP concepts that we recommended or submit them without prioritization. And I'd like to make a pitch for the first of those, which is to submit them in the priority order. As you noted, Judge Conklin, we put a lot of work into this. We solicited some non-TICBAC courts. We looked at everything, and we came up with our priority order. I don't see any rationale for submitting the list without prioritizing.
So it's been – that's been – and that's an official motion. That's a motion from Judge Marginis. So
I second.
Okay, it's been seconded. So now I'm going to join in that comment, and I will thank the working group that came together. There were maybe not daily, but close to that, meetings of this working group, both in person and on the phone, to really flesh these out. And without naming those names in particular, I want to thank, again, as I do, the members of this committee and the work they do, and the working group is a great example of that. So I Judge Martin, thank you for making that motion, that these will, in fact, now be forwarded to JBBC in that ranked order, 1 through 5, and that should not reflect a thought from this. And I don't mean to speak for all of us, but I think it's accurate to say we're not saying that none of the, for instance, new judgeships at number 5 is not something we don't care about. The reason these are here is because they've been thoroughly vetted, and we've had a lot of other ones we thought about, and these 5 really rose to the top. But at the top, these are how they ranked. It's been moved and seconded that, in fact, the council we now present to JBBC, Table 1, and Judge Marginis, did you then, was your motion also to Table 2 to then pass to JBBC in no particular order those concepts?
No, my motion only was as to Table 1. As to Table 2, we might need to engage in some further discussion.
Okay, so the motion is to Table 1 only at the present time, and let's just break it up if you folks don't mind, and we'll take that motion first. To approve Table 1 in the ranked order, moved and seconded. Any additional discussions, objections, or concerns about that motion? Hearing none. Any opposition to the motion, moved and seconded, that Table 1 be forwarded to JBBC in that ranked order? Hearing and seeing none, I'll deem it unanimously approved that Table 1 is now to be submitted to JBBC by the Chair at its May meeting. Okay. So now the second part of this discussion is Table 2. And Judge Buckley?
I would throw out that we, one, have a priority and that we consider switching A and B and putting language access expansion as A, or the top priority of that second tier, whatever, however we're calling it.
So is your, and I'm just looking for clarification, is your suggestion to rank them overall or to break out the language access expansion individually and then say to JBBC, as far as other BCPs, we are treating that individually and recommending that it be approved above the remaining group, and those are not ranked? Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I'm happy with that. I just wanted to pull language access out and up, and if it's in that format, that's definitely acceptable.
Judge Buckley, if that's a motion, I'd second that.
It is a motion. Thank you for seconding.
Go ahead.
Good, Brandy.
I was just going to say, too, there is an option if you want to include any of these in the ranking of the first table, the 1 through 5. So, more to think about.
Well, we already we've already done 1 through 5. I guess we could reopen it.
I wouldn't want to do that.
No. But I don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my question is about the 18.2 in the language expansion, Cowboy. Does that include the shortfall?
Oh, it does.
Okay.
Is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Great.
Contingent. It's a contingency request in the event something didn't work.
So the motion is now by Judge Buckley and approved by Rebecca Fleming that Table 2 be modified and that we, I think as you said, we move up language access expansion as a priority above A, C, D, and E, and F, and then A, C, D, E, and F are then submitted separately without a ranking.
Correct.
NG.
I'm
not following.
NG.
Because this says these are listed in alphabetical order, but that's all that what I'm hearing here is that we're starting with the rankings in numerical order by listing what's here as B as number one. Am I missing what's going on?
That's not what I heard. I heard that we're breaking out B separately and ranking that above all the others, and the others are going as a single group without being ranked. Unless you folks want to rank them individually as well, but I don't see any strong support for that thought. Mike Roddy?
Maybe a friendly amendment, because I think we've got to pay attention to F, which is facility modifications. We're already seeing the impact of a lack of funds to maintain our existing facilities, and as the facility mod committee likes to say, we're running to failure. And it might be appropriate to go with B and F, and then the remainder I don't have a strong opinion on. But that's, again, to highlight the importance, at least at the trial court level, on getting adequate funding for that operation, for that function.
I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
So just for clarification for staff, is that amendment then that we'd rank language access 1?
Yes.
We then would rank trial court facility operations as 2?
Yes.
And the rest would go as a group without being ranked?
Yes.
And that's
agreeable.
Friendly amendment?
Yes.
And Judge Cope?
So then going as a group without being ranked, but including the information from the other committees as to their rankings? Because they have those rankings right there, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. I think I've hopefully not confused that too much. I think everybody appears to be in understanding of the motion that's been moved with the friendly amendment that's now been moved and seconded. Any additional objections, concerns, or discussion items on this before I call for a vote? Seeing and hearing none, is there any opposition to now the motion to send to the JBBC language access expansion number 1, trial court facilities operations number 2, and the rest of them in no particular order except for the alphabetical for administrative purposes only? Any opposition? Hearing and seeing none, that motion is unanimously approved.
So we still have the budget presentation to make. Oh, and item seven, and I've sort of shoved and moved things along. This is about the time we had scheduled for our break, and we can do that. We're usually pretty efficient in about, well, you know what, Doug is here, and Doug has other work to do, and I don't think it's going to take too long for Doug, so I'm going to defer everybody's growling stomachs to Doug and item seven, which is the audit letter that you all have at page 54 of your material. My apologies, Doug.
My apologies.
No, not at all. I've learned never to get in the way of a nutrition, but I am here. Go ahead.
Okay. At your last committee meeting, you got a letter from the Advisory Committee on Audits and Financial Accountability that discussed some inconsistencies in encumbrance policies. So after that meeting, we took that letter and did some analysis on it, and we're coming back with a recommendation about how to deal with that. In the letter, there were two primary issues, and this starts on page 52 of your materials with a recommendation on page 53. There were two primary issues. One of them had to do with multi-year contracts and how to encumber funds for that. One thing I want to point out to start with is that whether or not it's appropriate to do a multi-year contract is covered in the Judicial Branch Contracting Manual, which covers contracts. How you do the funding for it, the encumbering side of it, is an accounting function, and that's why we're talking about the Financial Policies and Procedures Manual. So just to kind of clarify why those are different. So with the multi-year contract, it was a little vague on and hard, I would suggest, for courts to interpret when was it appropriate to encumber multi-year money and when not. And so in Attachment 7B, we've tried to clarify that and make it more clear and give better guidance to the courts on how to do that. That was one of the items in their letter. The other item had to do with a policy statement that came in a letter when we first started talking about encumbrances that went through the through this committee, and that allowed courts to encumber money in the current year if it would give them flexibility in a future budget year, which we thought at the time was an appropriate thing to do because courts were adjusting to the 1% cap. And to actually using encumbrance rules more in line with how the state was doing it because of the 1% policy that was implemented. We think that it's now appropriate that we can take that out because courts should have been making these adjustments as they went along, as was stated in those encumbrance policies before. So that's the other big change that you'll see is that bullet has been stricken in our recommendation. So the recommendation on page 53 is that you ask staff that normally do the updates to the Trial Court Financial Policy and Procedure Manual, you ask them to take Attachment 7B and run it through expedited cycle of review so that it can be presented to the Judicial Council in either July or their next meeting, I think it's September, to have this added to the Financial Policies and Procedures Manual, which will then take out the inconsistency between the two policies. And so that's our recommendation on page 53.
Okay. Thank you so much. And questions, concerns? Chad?
Just a comment. I don't have any objection to the recommendation. One of the things that Doug just said, though, was the to try to get it through on an expedited basis. Given the inconsistency and that we know that some courts have interpreted it one way and some the other, however the guidance comes out, some folks are going to have to change their policies. And so whatever expedited process it goes through, I want to make sure it's not so expedited that the courts and their CFOs don't have a meaningful opportunity to really review it and provide whatever public comment. So that's just a comment on that.
And I can respond to that. The normal process for the FIN manual is about a 10-month process where we have a group of court CFOs that assist us in gathering and vetting and prioritizing the items that we want to work on and then help us develop the specific language that we're going to use. What I'm talking about is taking just this one item by itself, running it through that committee, having them review it. I think there's something in the recommendation about, you know, maybe a little bit of wordsmithing to make it more clear. And then there is a legislative requirement that this go to all of the courts for review. It goes to the Department of Finance for review. and it goes to the controller's office for review. And so all of that would still occur, and that's why we're suggesting maybe the July or the September meeting.
Thanks.
Sure.
And also, this is Sherry Carter. Isn't it true, Doug, and I certainly hope you say yes, there would not be an audit finding, Chad, on something that's not clear in the procedures that are provided to the CEOs. That would be very unfair. So as a member of the Audit and Financial Accountability Committee, I think it's really important that we not create findings when there's either a lack of direction or conflicting direction. So I think that once it comes out, we have a duty to make sure we're in compliance, and I think it's good we've got this out there now, but there should not be a finding during that period because it's not in the materials that provide guidance to the branch.
Yes.
Thank you.
I think that's what you asked for.
Probably the best comment all day. Doug, thank you so much. Any other, before we call for a vote on this, I don't think it's been a motion.
I'll move.
Okay, so Judge Buckley moves, and is your motion to adopt the recommendation set forth on page 53?
Yes.
Seconded by Judge Cope. So the recommendation now is moved and seconded at page 53. I'm going to open it up for any discussions, comments, or concerns. Hearing and seeing none. Is there any opposition to the recommendation set forth at page 53? Hearing and seeing none, the recommendation is unanimously approved.
Thank you.
So now I'm going to push the envelope even further. It's noon, and rather than break and come back for what might just be a 10 or 15-minute discussion, recognizing the distance folks have traveled and the work that has to be completed, I'm going to suggest that we just plow through here, get this done, and that way folks can tend to other very important tasks today. Zlatko, I don't mean in any way to be disrespectful or to rush you.
Never.
But let's turn to your item, which is a discussion item only, and I'm just going to turn it right to you.
Sure.
Because,
Thank you, Judge Conklin. In terms of budget update, where we are, I think I mentioned earlier that the May revision by statute is required to be submitted on or before May 14th. And so, you know, we're obviously tracking that. There's been variability at times and when budgets have been released, and so we're always ready and vigilant on any of those changes. So we're ready to communicate anything in the May revision to you as soon as we find out about it. We have budget hearings that have been ongoing. We're very thankful that Mike Roddy and Nancy Eberhardt and Judge Nadler were coming to the initial visits, the initial hearings. Since then, there have been a bit more technical minor issues. We anticipate some sort of big bang meetings where a lot of issues are being dealt with throughout state budgets coming in the next couple of weeks. So with the release of the May revision and the close down of legislative budget actions, we'll be able to get a real good sense as to where we are in terms of the governor's budget plus anything that's coming in May. As you know, we are advocating for additional judgeships and lifting of and revisions to the 1% cap as a sort of in addition to the governor's budget proposal. Once the May revision is released, and the legislature will have a set of flurry of hearings with their hopes to make an action on the budget by June 15th, and then the governor has 12 days to sign that, and again, we'll be tracking that through the process and making sure you're aware of what's going on, and ultimately when the budget is enacted, obviously much of the work that was done today that's going to go to the council will be part of that budget, we're hopeful, and anything else that's there. In terms of sort of where we are statewide with revenues, going into April, the state was $2.7 billion low on personal income tax revenues. There were some guesses, some educated and smart guesses as to why that was. I think you've heard me maybe mention this before, a little bit about the federal tax changes and when folks were submitting their payments. And there was a thought that maybe there was a shift away from December's quarterly payment and maybe just reconciling in April. And that was some of the guess and hope because that's when the big drop happened was in December. And so through the April period, we needed to make up this $2.7 billion, and April receipts not only made up but exceeded it slightly on the personal income tax side. So that was good news. So the governor's budget's update in January, which had projected additional revenues beyond the Budget Act, was met plus. And then the other side of it, there's corp tax has been well above the forecast. And so I think that there's a view that there's at least the amount of money that was included in the governor's budget. What we don't know, though, are things like population adjustments in, you know, the various automatic adjustment areas like in corrections, health, and human services. So while we could speak to the revenue side as on, you know, obviously it's a better way to be building a budget, we don't know necessarily until we get the May revision what other caseload drivers eat into that. And obviously any revenue above the projections automatically are going to have an aspect going to Prop 98 and education. I think it's a good spring to be building the budget as this governor's first budget is going through, and also understand that there's many policy proposals that were offered in the January budget that didn't necessarily have all the dollars and cents fleshed out. And so, again, we're going to be seeing, I think, some important issues coming forward in the May revision globally in the budget. But, again, we appreciate your support and all of it. I think the budget is, you know, at least from an overall budget perspective, is in a reasonably healthy place. I think they're always keeping an eye to the out years and not looking to necessarily make major commitments on an ongoing basis. Because if you looked at the budget, I think the increased revenues, about two-thirds went to one-time solutions to ensure sort of budget stability and investments in the rainy day fund. So I think from our perspective, a lot of the work that you've done hopefully will materialize in the final budget. And I'll see where we go from there. So that's my budget update. And any questions? Again, appreciate the support from Mike and Nancy and Judge Nadler at their hearings, and we're getting questions from ledge staff throughout the process, and they've always been very receptive and responsive. So that's very helpful for us.
Questions, thoughts, concerns? John remains in the room, too. John, you've been remarkably quiet today, but thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Judge. John Wardlaw, I'd only add that through the hearing process, one of the focal points that we've heard from both houses of the legislature was an interest in how our discretionary funds are being used and an expectation of further reporting at some point on the outcomes associated with that. So really clearly hearing that from both houses.
Good point. I think that's why Mike's been so busy, because there's a lot of questions, particularly like, say, court reporters about what's going on there. And so I think that's a spot on point.
Any other questions for the experts in the room? Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, if there's nothing else, I just wanted to say that I want to acknowledge the tremendous work of staff that they've done putting the package together. I think getting this kind of information early, albeit with some opportunities, you know, for some changes and that we know, you know, will come as far as finalizing them, but to have your fiscal pictures painted as early as this, I think it's hopefully, you know, making your planning process much better as we go along. So I do, again, I want to acknowledge the hard and tremendous work of staff to bring this, because it's detailed. There's a lot of thought and pride, and albeit there's moments where we, you know, have an issue here or there, but I think all in all, it's been a great work by the staff to the committee, and I want to thank them for that.
Thank you.
I agree, and as
Judge Thompson, I agree.
Yeah. So as well, I know you all know how important the work we do is, but that work simply it could not be done or important without Randy and Lucy and all the staff. So we say it every time. I think it falls on deaf ears, but the work that they do, I think, is only truly appreciated by those who work with them. So thank you very much for all that. Considering that as well, I think our efficiency today is reflected by the preparation everybody put in for today's meeting. I recognize all of you travel from afar. Most of you probably left before the sun came up, and even breaking early today, you won't get home until the sun's long down. And we were much more efficient today. Rather than 4 hours, we had this done in a little over two. Mm-hmm. And while I apologize for taking you away from your work, I don't think we could have got this done in a phone call, and I don't think we would have been as effective in a phone call, though we try to do our work that way. I truly appreciate everybody in the room and those on the phone. You're almost always here. I know you couldn't make it today, but thank you so much for your work. I've said enough. If there's nothing else, we're good at the order. I'll conclude this as I do every time and simply say, go Dodgers, and we're adjourned.
Oh, my God. We're going to have phone call meetings now.
And we're off the air. We're off to lunch. It's here. It's in the back.
feel free to grab and go or sit down and relax before you go, but...
The host has left the meeting, so at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you, and goodbye.